I'm Omar. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is January 10th, 2001. And I'm a member, thank you, I'm a member of the Southern Pacific Group in Charlotte, North Carolina. They're all over there. And I'm nervous. Thank you. Yeah, that's my home group for you right there. So I'm supposed to talk about sponsorship, leading by example. And I called my sponsor, Terry, this last week to say, well, you know, what should I say? And he said, well, you know, you have good examples of sponsorship. And he said, you sponsor guys. And so just share your experience and don't wax too philosophic. So he knows me. That's the first rule of sponsorship. Make sure your sponsor knows you. So he knows me and my tendency to do that. But so I'm going to tell you my experience with sponsorship. But before I do, my wife and her current sponsor and former sponsors are actually all here. So I did want to start by clearing some things up. Now, so I was 12-step by a guy in an emergency room. And I didn't know I was being 12-step. He was a member of AA, and he shared his experience, his strength, and his hope with me. And I thought I should be talking. I should be telling him my story, but he was telling me about his drinking. And I didn't understand why, but I have to tell you that as a result of him telling me about his drinking, I really started to trust somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't trust anybody. I didn't trust anybody or anything, but when I saw that he drank like I used to drink and didn't anymore, that really changed my perspective. And I think in a lot of ways, sponsorship has over and over again changed my perspective, in so many ways. He started to sponsor me, and a few months into early sobriety, I really wanted to drink very badly. In fact, I had a kind of a fist pounding on the bar kind of desire to drink. And so I called him up and I said, hey, Dwayne, I really want to drink. And so he told me a story about how he called his sponsor when he was in early sobriety and said, hey, Jim, I really want to drink. And Jim said, what are you calling me for? I'm not a liquor store. I have no alcohol for you. Click. And then he called him back and he said, no, I mean, I really want to not drink. And his sponsor said, oh, there must be something wrong with this hearing aid. I can definitely help you with that. And when my sponsor told me that story, that also completely changed my perspective. And that's what happens over and over for me again. That first sponsor took me through the steps and I was terrified of taking the steps. I was terrified of step five because the statute of limitations wasn't up on some of the things I'd done. I was terrified of step nine, and my sponsor said, well, what are you so scared of? And I told him I was really scared of making financial amends. And he said, why? And I said, well, I don't have any money. And he said, well, that's going to make that pretty easy. And he was right. And he said something that really altered my perspective again, which is he said, don't worry, these people on your financial amends list, they don't want your money. They want their money. And again, my entire perspective is shifted again, and I don't realize that I'm walking around with your money in my wallet. And, you know, I think most of us are like this, but I don't like to think of myself as a dumb guy. I don't think I'm a dumb guy, but, I'm always at risk of convincing myself that my ideas make sense and are good. And that's what sponsorship has really, I mean, if I don't get a chance to tell you anything else today, I want to say that, I don't know what ingredient in this program makes the soup. I don't know what specific thing it takes for me to stay sober for another day, but I can tell you that without sponsorship, in my life, it could not happen. A guy like me is going to figure things out and destroy my life. And so that's definitely true. So early on, my needs with a sponsor were very different because I didn't know how to make my laundry. I didn't eat breakfast. I make my bed. I mean, just the basic things of like put your clothes on and go out the door and go to work. all those things I was really struggling with in early sobriety. And so I guess my first sponsor really helped me with the basics in terms of just putting one foot in front of the other. And I stayed very close to him, and then he did something you're actually not supposed to do. He got drunk. And that was very challenging for me because I had confused the messenger with the message. And I started to wonder, well, you know, which part of this message that I heard was the part that got him drunk? And I started to question that. But fortunately, I got another sponsor. And by the way, that guy's sober now and doing great. But fortunately, I got another sponsor when I moved to Minnesota. And I moved and I got Terry as my sponsor. And I knew that I had made the right decision because I met him in a sandwich shop across from a Friday night meeting in Hopkins, Minnesota. And he said, you know, well, what's going on, Omar? And I said, you know how when you back off of AA and you're not going to as many meetings, maybe you cut back to one or two meetings and you sort of start to feel miserable? And he said, no. And I knew that I had found a right guy to sponsor me. And he, you know, he at that time he had 34 years of sobriety, and he's, you know, sponsoring 32 guys. And I think the lineage for me has really been really important because these guys, my brother pigeons, many of them are here today, right here in this room. And I would do anything for them, and they would do anything for me. And that's how that sense of that family has been so important in terms of feeling like a part of something, because when I arrived in AA, I didn't really feel like a part of anything. So that's been a huge aspect of what's been going on. It may surprise you to learn this, but occasionally I don't agree with my sponsor. I know. So I asked him, well, what do I do if I don't agree with your suggestions? And he said, well, we talk about it, and I hear your perspective, and I listen to you, and then I tell you what to do. Now, my first sponsor had said that I just had to follow his suggestions. He didn't really craft it as suggestions. He just basically said, do what I tell you to do. That's what my first sponsor said. But when I poked around in AA for a while, I saw that in the book it said there were suggestions. And so I took that back to him. And I said, hey, you know, this stuff you've been telling me to do, I don't actually have to do it because it says it's suggestions in here, air quotes for the audio. He said, yeah, I know about that. He said, they are suggestions for everybody else. They're requirements for you. And I guess he just knew me. And with my current sponsor, you know, it's the same kind of thing, which is just knowing that he has my best interests at heart. He cares about my sobriety. He's loyal to my sobriety. And so when I have the privilege of sponsoring men in AA also. And that's what I think about when I sponsor these guys, is being loyal to their sobriety, you know, being there for them. These guys really keep me sober. And sometimes the guys I sponsor, and this really surprised me the first time it happened, don't do what I suggest. It's terrible, I know. It's like, but, well, I called my sponsor up and I said, these guys, this guys aren't doing what I are telling them to do. And he said, yeah, that really makes you look like a bad AA, doesn't it? And, I guess I realized that ego can get so caught up, especially for me, and I have a disease of ego, so, In retrospect with that, I guess today I realized that these guys, well, let me just back up. Most people in this room didn't know me when I was drinking, but I look much better today sober than I did when I was drinking. So as far as making me look bad, alcoholism made me look pretty bad. And sponsoring guys is how I keep from going back to that. So there's whether someone follows the suggestion or not today, I know that it's helping me stay sober. And that's been an awesome part of my sobriety too. I went through a phase in my sobriety where I really thought that my job was to teach people how to stay sober. And that was not effective, surprise. And my sponsor really emphasizes that this is not a teaching program. And I'm supposed to share my experience, strength, and hope. When I get to a meeting, I'm supposed to look for that guy that's sitting by himself in the corner, sulking and looking down, and go talk to him, not necessarily catch up with all my friends, and that I'm supposed to reach out my hand to the new guy. And that's been a huge component of my sobriety, because I have these problems today, which my sponsor calls well people problems. Seems like he's belittling them a little bit, but they are, you know, and he suggests that I talk to some new guy and I'll be cured of those problems. And I am, you know, when I talk to somebody who's suffering, those things have so much less weight in my life. I've had the opportunity to move several times in sobriety. And when I left Minnesota in the Foxhall group and joined the Southern Pacific group in Charlotte, North Carolina, I had a frank conversation with my sponsor about, hey, do I change sponsors now because I'm moving away? And I didn't want to, because I'd invested so much into that. Well, I'm sure people in the audience, people here know that, invest so much into the relationship, you don't want to change. And, you know, what he said to me was, these are not disposable relationships. And that really hit me hard. And it made me realize that, it's not a name on a piece of paper, and it's not somebody that you can sort of check a box for, but it's a real relationship with another human being who knows what's going on with me, who's square with me, and who really understands my problems and can tell me things like, don't wax too philosophic. And you know, I guess the one thing I'll leave you with is that when I was new in sobriety, I encountered a lot of situations where I would look around and I would really feel like I wasn't good enough, didn't measure up, really couldn't do this thing in some way. And both my first sponsor and my current sponsor, when things like that have happened, have given me a real shot in the arm and a lot of encouragement to do the next right thing. And so I guess the thing that's really sat with me recently in thinking about sponsorship and my experience on sponsorship is that a lot of times what the suffering alcoholic like me needs, and the guys I sponsor, is much more a shot in the arm than a kick in the pants. And that's a kind of sponsorship that I have today. It's a sponsorship about participation. It's a sponsorship that's a real relationship. Even though I live in North Carolina and he's in Minnesota, I fly out there a couple times a year to see him. And he's always asking me, you know, what's going on with the guys I sponsor, and how are they doing, and what am I doing to participate in AA, and how am I giving the program away? And when he does that, I know that if I ask the guys I sponsor the same question, that I need to be doing those things. So just in both directions, the way the lineage and these relationships make such a huge difference in my sobriety. It's been a tremendous privilege to be able to be sponsored and to be a sponsor. It's been a privilege to be a member of AA, and I thank you all.
Thank you, Omar. Next is Susanna G. from Rehoboth, Delaware.
Hi there, everybody. My name is Susanna, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 10th, 1989. Thank you. My home group is the Let Your Freak Flag Fly group. That's right. We meet every Thursday at noon at Camp Rehoboth in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and we'd love to have you all anytime. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women, and I work the steps with all of them. First of all, I'd like to start by thanking the committee for asking me to be here today. I have a little bit of a sense of what it takes to make all of this happen, and I really am in awe of it. Just to set this one room up is a big job. I'd also like to thank the Chair Mary and the other speakers today, Omar and Tamara. I know that AA has such a huge depth of sobriety and knowledge, and we're really fortunate to be here and experience this together. I got into town on Wednesday, and I thought I should come find the room where I was going to be speaking. And I discovered really quickly when I walked in here that that was probably not a very good idea. So for two nights, I've had nightmares about all of these empty chairs, the way that I saw the room when I walked in here on Wednesday. And because I'm an alcoholic, it never occurred to me that people would actually show up and fill the chairs. There really aren't even this many people in my hometown, so I really, really want to thank you all for showing up here today. Whether your sponsor suggested that you come, or if you, I don't care if you just wandered in here by accident, I feel like I've sort of stepped into a warm bath up here, and it's really a great feeling. I thought I had an idea of what it was going to be like to come here and do this, and I realized I had no idea what this was going to be like. You know, when you're a child, I don't think that there's anybody that really says, you know, when I grow up, I really want to be a nasty, messy, selfish, hurtful train wreck of a human being. But from the first time I drank when I was 11 years old, that's pretty much where I was headed. I didn't know it at the time, but I figured it out that my family tree is very full of alcoholism, and the choices that I made continue to add fuel to that fire. I once heard the saying, my family didn't make me an alcoholic, but they made me very, very thirsty. This is very true for me. So by the time that I woke up with DTs, I had no job, I was about to be homeless. I don't know that I necessarily would have said I was completely hopeless on that day. I was, but I just didn't know it. But there was a little space in my heart that knew that I was headed straight towards death, and that wasn't what I wanted. So, you know, I got sober when I was 22 years old, and back then there really weren't a lot of young people in meetings, especially where I live. There were basically a lot of old men smoking cigarettes in church basements, and so I just jumped into emptying the ashtrays. I asked one of the few women that were there to sponsor me, and I got started on this thing. I've had five sponsors in my 25 years of recovery, and each one of them has given me very special gifts. My first sponsor was a very generous person, and she also happened to be a therapist, which was a really good fit for me. She handed me the famous "Are you an alcoholic?" questionnaire, and when I ran out of yeses, she just gently invited me to join her at a meeting and said, maybe I should stop seeing you as a patient and maybe just take you to meetings with me. My second sponsor walked me through the steps as they were written in the big book. My third sponsor was a little bit of an anomaly, as I discovered pretty quickly into our relationship that she thought you could smoke pot and still be sober. And clearly we parted ways pretty soon thereafter. She told me I didn't get it, and I was happy to agree with her. My fourth sponsor was a woman with over 30 years of sobriety who was very loving and kind. Unfortunately, we had a difference of opinion, as Omar referred to, about how I should work the steps, and this woman fired me. It was really a devastating experience for me, and from it I've probably taken one of the greatest lessons of my recovery. My current sponsor has taught me that I do not have the right to fire sponsees. I know that not everyone in the program agrees with that, but it's what I was taught. And what I learned from being fired is that I never know how delicate someone else is, and that being a sponsor is a tremendous responsibility. I believe that if it's not working between a sponsor and a sponsee, there's always a way to invite someone to make a change. But I'm never going to fire anyone because I'm afraid they might leave and never come back to this program. Thank you. So, as I said a little bit earlier, I've been sober for 25 years, and this is my first World Convention. Everyone told me how overwhelming it would be, and I had absolutely no idea. So I told you before, I came into town on Wednesday, I came in here, I got the badge, I walked around, I saw this room, I flipped out, and so then we got up, and it was yesterday, and we said, well, let's go over to the Sober Village and walk around and get some souvenirs. And that's where everything changed for me here at this convention. I was walking around, and I was looking at all the people with the badges on from different places, and I realized for the first time in my life that almost every single person standing near me was in recovery. And I also realized that I could literally turn to any one of you people and ask for help, and you would do anything I asked for. Now, I don't think there's many people out there who aren't alcoholics that want to come join us, but if they had any idea this stuff that we get, they might think about drinking a little more, actually. You know, I realized yesterday walking around that it's just so much easier to look at the differences that we have between us than our similarities. And that kind of all went away in the Sober Village for me yesterday. You know, I have a responsibility to lead by example, and not just when I'm sponsoring people and not just when I'm chairing a meeting, but all of the time. You know, my sponsor reminds me that I don't know who's watching and I don't know who's listening, and I might be the only big book that somebody ever gets. And that, the first time I heard that, it sort of bothered me. I felt like it put a lot of pressure on me, but now I take it as an honor. I really do. You know, I have been able to watch myself and watch other women that I work with over time, and I really believe that hurt people go out and hurt other people. So I really try to work on myself so that I can fulfill all my primary purpose in this program. You know, whenever I hear somebody say, just don't drink and go to meetings, I think, oh dear Lord, no, don't do that. You know, because I believe that this is a suggested program, not a program of suggestions. If I think it's a program of suggestions, my alcoholic mind immediately tells me I can pick which things I want to do and which things I don't want to do, like it's Chinese menu. And so I've been, you know, it's been told to me that it's a suggested program. I'm either in or I'm out. And I have found that when I'm in this program, my life changes tremendously and I'm able to be of service to other human beings and be happy and peaceful. You know, I was thinking about what I was going to talk about today, and I realized that I really wanted to go back and reread the 12th step in the 12 and 12. I think that a lot of times when we're working steps with people, everybody's so relieved when they get through their amends that 10, 11, and 12 sort of, they lose out a little bit because it's like, I said I'm sorry, nobody wanted my money, everybody's forgiven me, I've got my job back. Okay, I can just coast. And taking this commitment really allowed me the opportunity to go back and reread some of the literature and think about the importance of step 12 in my life today and in the lives of people that I'm going to walk through the steps. And so I just wanted to read this part to you that I love. And I can just say that if you haven't read the 12th step in the 12 and 12 recently, go back because it's kind of amazing. This is my favorite part. It's near the end and it says, service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort, the well-understood fact that in God's sight all human beings are important, the proof that love freely given surely brings a full return, the certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons, the surety that we no longer need to be square pegs in round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. I want to thank you all so much for letting me be of service today. It is not only my duty, but as Dr. Bob said, it is truly my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susanna. Our third speaker is Tamara B. from Roseville, California.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Tamara Burleson, and I am an alcoholic. It's It's great to be here. I really want to thank the committee. What an honor. And personally, my local delegate and friend, Kelly, thank you for dropping my name in the hat. Didn't dream I'd ever get chosen out of that hat, but this is just really a privilege and honor to be here. And the topic today, hearing both Omar and Susanna, I'll tell you, this topic is something I've loved and breathed since early sobriety. I believe in sponsorship and leading by example. I've had a great sponsor go before me, and she still does, and active in the middle. First, to ground myself, I just want to tell you the truth about me. You know, this morning in this rainstorm I got caught in with my husband, we're on our way here, and you know, you're a little nervous doing all this stuff, and we're on the way here, and we got caught in the huge storm with the thunder and the lightning and everything happening. And I'll tell you what, at one point, well, we got lost. I mean, not lost, but we got mixed up, and he was back a block, and I was ahead of him, and at one point, I'm struggling with my umbrella, and then now I cut my thumb on the umbrella. Now I'm bleeding, and I'm inside the huge place here. We got in last night, so we got in a little late, and, you know, I'm bleeding all over, and I'm thinking, oh, where's that coming from? Good thing I'm wearing red. I was just a mess. And I'll tell you, it doesn't matter. You guys, I can spill coffee down the front of me and be okay with you, and I thank you for that from the bottom of my heart. I want to tell you a little bit about me. I drank alcoholically for about 21 years, and I never knew anyone in AA. And no examples here for me when I got here. And I didn't even know I was an alcoholic until the day I sobered up. And my sobriety date is May 29th, 1989. And I've been sober for 25, I know you're thanking AA for that, thank you. I have been sober 26 years, 1 month, and 3 days. And I've had a sponsor for 26 years and 28 days. And I met her when I was 4 days sober. I'm at my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked in the room, and of course I was scared, and nobody really was talking to me. But I saw a lady in the front of the room, and she had a dress on. And she extended her hand to me, and she said, "Hi. Welcome to AA. You must be new." And I thought, well, how does she know that? And so I'm talking with this lady, and she takes the time to explain a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous to me. And I had only been to one meeting. She asked me if I had a big book, and I said no. And so she told me why I needed to get one, and they showed me where that was. And next thing she said is, "Do you have a sponsor?" And I said, "What's a sponsor?" And so she took a moment to explain that to me. You know, not only did she welcome me to AA, she was with two other women. Now, one of those other women became my sponsor. I asked that lady that night, "Will you be my sponsor?" And then the other lady that was with them, it was my sponsor, my new sponsor, has a newcomer with her. And it was those three ladies, I always like to remember that was not their home group, yet they were the three ladies reaching out. So this alcoholic didn't have to stand alone. Because two nights before that, I'm in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm alone. I'm sitting by myself. And there's people around me, but when I first came to AA, we all know how we feel when we get here. And when they asked for alcoholics to raise their hands, I raised my hand and I stated my name, that I was an alcoholic, and I sat down and cried. And nobody, you know, said welcome or anything, and gosh, I just felt so alone. So at that second meeting is when I got a real dose of what this program was all about. That next morning I started calling that lady. My sponsor had asked me to give her a call every day for 30 days, and we started getting to know each other a little bit. And that next morning when I called her, she asked me if I had a pen and paper. And I said, well, I'll get one. And I did. And I started taking notes. And, you know, one of the very first things she asked me, "So are you willing to go to any lengths for your sobriety?" And I talked to her a little bit about that, like, what do you mean? But I was, you guys. I had drank alcoholically, as I mentioned, for several years. I'm a party drunk. I'm a bar drunk. I did disgusting things for many years. And I didn't want to live that way anymore. I wanted to be done. I was ready to do whatever it took to change my life, to change me. And one of the first fruits of sponsorship for me was this sponsor directed me to get on my knees that day. And she said, I want you to get on your knees and I want you to ask God to keep you sober and to give you the power and strength to stay sober, Tamara, because you don't have it on your own. And I want you also to ask him to remove the obsession for you to drink. So I started saying that prayer on a daily basis. And you guys, I had had a wonderful God in my life as a child. I have beautiful memories of my mother being next to my bed, saying my prayers with me every night. And somewhere along the line, you know, I grew up, and it was right around probably the sixth or seventh grade when I started smoking and drinking. God was out the window. And I hid from him the next several years because he didn't, you know, I didn't want him to see the things I was doing. And so, you know, I go on about my life. And anyway, so with sponsorship, I started right off the bat getting on my knees with God. One of the things, my first complaint in the first 30 days, you know, that little gal, Linda, became my best buddy in AA. And we, about a month later, another friend came along, Karen, she sobered up, and then Kim sobered up, and they called us the Four Amigos. And, you know, I just got real busy with them and following what they did. At that time, we were all sponsored by the same lady, and we just went places together and went to meetings, and we were excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. And after 30 days of chatting with that sponsor on the phone every day and going to meetings and all, we started the steps. And my sponsor has taken the time over the years to take me through the steps in the big book and in the 12 and 12. She's also taken me through the traditions, then the concepts, then the service manual. She's really given of her time and love of this program. From there, she said, now it's your job to pass that on. And it's like, wow, what an order, you know. And I've been trying to do that, you know, since the day I started sponsoring, which was the first home group I had. My home group now is Folsom Big Book Group in Folsom, California. And my first home group was Bellflower Big Book Group in Bellflower. And I'll tell you, there was about 150, 200 people there every Monday night. And it was competition to sponsor anybody then. And my first sponsee came along when I was a year sober. And I remember going to Debbie, my sponsor, and saying, oh my gosh, I had somebody ask me to spot, what am I going to do? And so it makes me work a better program, that's for sure, because now I'm calling her even more often, asking her questions of what am I going to do. And, you know, I often think back at that first sponsee, you know, patience, my, you know the saying. And my first little sponsee, you guys, I told my sponsor, she doesn't read very well, and she has a stutter. She says, great, that'll teach you patience. And instead of meeting her for an hour, hour and a half, it would always be like a two-hour meeting, and I needed that. And I became close to this little gal, and we just started working together. And then I got another sponsee, and around 3.5 years of sobriety, I'm having to leave a home group that I fell in love with. I love this group. And Omer talked about moving in sobriety as well. And in the meantime, I started complaining to my sponsor within my first 30 days of sobriety about my husband, you see, because he was still drinking. And she said, Tamara, it's none of your business that he drinks. She said, you need to talk about your drinking and forget about his. When you go home after work every day, just ask him how his day went, that's all. You know, she said, just don't worry that he's in the bar every day. It's none of your business. And that was really hard to do. So I'm going to all these meetings, and I'm trying to keep that relationship alive. And in the meantime, I'm getting closer. He had 4 children, and we had some grandkids and a mother-in-law that I dearly loved. I finally got a good one after all those marriages before. And Anyway, I always like to say my first husband, you guys, his name was John. My second husband was John, and my first two mother-in-laws were Mary. So even back then, I was doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, right? So anyway, I complained about my husband all the time, him and his drinking. And what happened over the years is not only my sponsor, but my friends in AA suggested, you know, Tamara, whenever you talk to him about leaving, because I thought I was going to have to leave this relationship, they would say, don't talk about your drinking or his drinking, whatever you do. And I was 1 year and 7 months sober. And what happened is I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went home that night, and it was New Year's Eve, and I went home that night and I talked to my husband and I said, you know, Lim, I'm going to have to leave this relationship. And it's not because I don't love you. It's because I found a new way to live here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of this program, this is how I feel. This is what I'm doing. And you're over on this path, and that's great. But, you know, I'm loving what they're giving me here. And it was this long conversation we had for 6 hours. And at the end of it, you guys, what happened is he said, I want that too. That's what I've been looking for. I want to go to one of these meetings with you, and you could have knocked me off my chair. I thought my life was over, you know, at that point. But that's very important in my sobriety, because what happened is just doing everything that a sponsor suggested, not perfectly by any means, but to the best of my ability, what happened is my life started changing in the first 30 days of my sobriety, to tell you the truth, you know, and it started getting better. And then I would get mad at him and he'd be drinking and, loud. You know, it just went on for a long time. But at 1 year and 7 months sober, that's, you know, that came to play. And so he started coming to meetings, and I remember my sponsor guiding me and saying, Tamara, stay out of the way. She said, introduce him to two of your favorite guys and let him go. And I did that. It was hard, but I let him go. I always thought I'd make a good sponsor for him, but he didn't ask me. And anyway, so the structure and discipline that I've gotten here in Alcoholics Anonymous has been so great for me. The big book talks about discipline, and I've learned those beautiful little disciplines from a sponsor. And I'm so ever grateful for that, because, you know, some of the things I've learned to do here, they may sound real simple to you, but doing what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it, that's a big thing. And I got to start living that and doing that in the first 30 days of my sobriety. A lot happened then. And I still, to this day, I take many of the same actions that I did back then, because they still all work, you know. I started sponsoring people when we moved up north to Folsom. My husband got in the program. He was a couple years sober when we moved. I was 3.5 years sober then. And we move up to Folsom, and we got to be a part of starting a little group there. And that is my home group today. We've been going there a little over 20 years. It's Folsom Big Book Group. We study the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous every Monday night. And when we moved, again, that was the hardest thing to do. And Omar, again, spoke about having to change sponsors. And my sponsor suggested I find local sponsorship. And so when I moved up north, I tried, and I was looking for someone, you know, with kind of the same structure and disciplines that I had learned. And I didn't see it right off the bat. And there was a day I said, you know, I'm really invested in this relationship with you, and I'm willing to do whatever you suggest. And so we ended up working together. She's been in my life this entire time. To me, a sponsor-sponsee relationship is based on love and respect. I have friends and newcomers and stuff in the program that'll say, oh, I hung up on my sponsor the other day. I was so darn mad at her. And I've always looked at, why would you hang up on someone that has given you every bit of time that you've asked for and needed? Someone that is only in your life to help you and mentor you. You know, I hope I always treat my sponsor with love and respect. She has been, I've told her things I've told no one else on this earth, you guys. And she doesn't judge me with this, you know. I tell you, sponsorship it's incredible. to give away what's been so freely given to me has been an absolute pleasure. I've learned, I've grown, I've tried. I sponsor a gaggle of girls, and it's a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, my sponsor sponsors probably double the amount of girls that I sponsor. But it's just been a journey, you know, in this room. I've never seen her sit on the home on the couch and tell me what to do or where to go. She's 39 years sober and out there doing the deal, always. And I love that example ahead of me because it shows me that I kind of thought you get a few years and you sit home eating bonbons, telling your sponsee, yeah, go down the street to this meeting and have a good time. Call me when it's over, you know. And she's taught me that, no, we're out there in the trenches. We're out there doing the deal. And, you know, I tell you, my sponsor's in this room today. My husband's in this room today. My friends, I have so many friends that are at this international. It's so incredible to be surrounded by loved ones, and sponsees are here, and grand sponsees. And I have a grand sponsor, you guys, that is 93 years old and 46 years sober. She's not here. She is an incredible woman, and I've been in touch with her when I couldn't get in touch with my sponsor. I was taught that pecking order. And when I couldn't get in touch with Debbie and I had something going on, then I would call Millie. And by golly, those women have always been there for me. It's been such an incredible thing. And I know that I've never wanted to argue or debate with my sponsor or hang up or do any of those things. And you guys, I'm the first to tell you, I've done things here right, wrong, and different. But key for me has been doing the very best that I can do. And it's not always perfect. You know, I pass it on that way. I've had to make some hard amends to people I sponsor. I've had them make amends to me for things. You know, we're human here. We're one alcoholic trying to help another. My sponsor has led a beautiful example by making amends to me and showing me how to do that as well. And I've made amends to her. You know, these steps just lead us to what we need to be doing here. They lead us to the God of our understanding, and we're surrounded by such an incredible force. But I couldn't have done any of this. My sobriety has always been contented. It's been, I've always been comfortable. I've always been in the middle. It's been happy. And I was kind of a high-end drunk, if you will, when I got here. Has my sobriety been so good because I've worked a good program, or, you know, they say this program is monkey see, monkey do. Is it because I followed the right monkey? You know, my sponsor actually wears a lot of glitz, so I like shiny things, so do monkeys, and I follow her around quite a bit. But she shines bright, but down deep it's the soul that shines bright. And I see that, and I continually want more. And I'm willing to take the action. I'm willing. I hope I always have the ability within myself to be willing to do anything my sponsor suggests. Because, again, when I got here, I thought maybe you get a year or two and you arrive. And that's all it's about. But it's so much more. And I hope I always have the willingness within me to do everything and anything she suggests. I hope I never stop working with a sponsor because, you see, I know what happens to the ones that stop working with a sponsor. And then they stop going to meetings. And then things happen. And then they get drunk. And I've seen it. And I've talked to too many. And I'm going to stay in the middle because today I know the middle. I'm comfortable in the middle of you guys. I want so much more of this. Without a sponsor leading me by her example and also continuing to lead me to the God of my understanding and to keep me in this light, you know, I wouldn't have much to pass on. And I take sponsorship so seriously. You know, this is a disease of life and death here, you know. And I hope I always answer the phone. It might sound simple to you, but for me, that's been a key thing, to continue to answer that phone. It's too easy to pick up a phone in today's world to say, nah, I don't want to talk to that sponsee today. Forget it, you know. But I don't. I've just been taught here we answer every phone call. You know, working with others has been a joy. I hope I can always keep God and Alcoholics Anonymous and my sponsor at the helm. Above all, I hope I always know that I can't sit home on the couch and direct others what to do here, that I need to be out there leading the way by the example that has been so freely and so graciously given to me with love and respect. You know, in closing, I want to read something that was pointed out to me a long time ago in Concept 9 by my sponsor. And this is something I take this seriously, and this is just a beautiful part. This is true particularly in the area of 12-step work, in which nearly all of us are actively engaged. Every sponsor is a leader. The stakes are about as big as they could be. A human life and usually the happiness of a whole family hang in the balance. What the sponsor does and says, how well he estimates the reactions of his prospects, how well he times and makes his presentation, how well he handles these qualities of leadership can make all the difference, often the difference between life and death. We thank God that Alcoholics Anonymous is blessed with so much leadership in all its affairs, and I thank God for you.